Welcome to the Football Game Plan Radio Network, where football makes sense. This is our draft prospect analysis show. I'm your host, Chris James, Director of Football Operations over here at Football Game Plan. And folks, took a little break. It's been about two calendar months since we've done a show. This is the 122nd episode of the Football Game Plan radio show, draft prospect analysis show, I should say, here on the Football Game Plan Radio Network. And back at the right time, everyone has declared for the NFL draft, the 2015 draft. All the playoff games are done as far as the playoff series in college football. The NFL playoffs are shaping up, the Super Bowl this weekend. So there's a lot of stuff that has happened over the last 2 months. And over the next few months until the NFL draft, I'll be recapping that stuff, including the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl, some of the bowl games, and just general performances, things that have happened that might have changed perception, more exposure that I've gained to more people. Again, I can't sit here and tell you, you know, if you come up and ask me a name of someone from some college I've never heard of, that I know about them. I can only tell you what I know about the people who I've seen and how I can assess them. I will be the last 2 months to try to gather some more information and become more refined in how I look at these players and their outlooks in the NFL. So again, the next, I'd say 4 months, 3.5 months until the NFL draft, there will be a lot of me catching up and going over some of the newer guys that I have more knowledge about now. So this week, what we're going to do is I'm going to do my first mock draft of the 2015 calendar year. I'm going to go through the first round, all 32 picks, and then if you don't have a first round pick, I'm going to go through the second round pick for you if you are a specific team or anything like that. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I'll go through the different criteria for my draft, things like that, just kind of let you know what you can expect. And earlier in the show, I'm going to do some other stuff outside of the draft. I'm going to go over something that's happened in the last 2 weeks, Deflategate or whatever, just get my opinion on it. I'm also going to give you my opinion on Media Day and Media Week, my Super Bowl prediction, and then we'll go over a certain position in the draft this year. We're going to do that at the end of the show. And I'll give you not really a ranking, but kind of my opinion on some of these guys. So we're going to start off with Deflategate just because it's been something that has truly been on the minds of everyone. There's been a big deal made about it, and I fully understand why there's a big deal and why there's a small deal made of it. So from the big deal perspective, let's start there. There's been a chain of incidents that have happened with the New England Patriots in the past, you know. When there's smoke, there's fire generally, and that's one of the things that people are looking at. They're saying, why does New England consistently stay in the news? Like, you don't see even other winning teams. You don't see Pittsburgh, who's won multiple championships in the last decade. They've actually won Super Bowls since 2005. They've won two. New England's won zero. So you don't see Pittsburgh consistently in the news with some of this stuff. So you wonder why you see New England. So that's where the whole big deal of it is. The incident in itself, to me, is a little deal. Now I understand the positives of playing with a deflated football. I'm going to sit here and say right now, one of the football teams I've played on for the last couple of years, we use a deflated football or underinflated football. It just makes things – it changes the scope, especially on some of those nights when it's a little colder out. Here's why it's not a big deal to me. Now, while it does change the scope, if you are sitting there as a team and you decide to make a decision like let's underinflate the balls, you know that you run the risk of not only getting caught, but it's not like it's one check. There's going to be hands on this football, these footballs, the whole game. The referees are going to check them before the game, during the game, after the game, have their hands on them. The other team's going to say, hey, wait a minute. If we get our hands on one of the balls, there's going to be an issue. You know, you're going to be able to tell. So that's the whole thing. If there was a gained advantage by the offense, it would have been kind of known. You know, there would have been something said by someone during the game, at least. Here's the other thing. The outcome of the game had nothing to do with the footballs. The outcome of the game had with do with one team not being ready for the stage. You know, their superstar and their young stars across the board were not ready for the test that New England put them through, and Indianapolis got worked. They got their tails whipped. So that's why it's a little deal to me. What should we do to improve this? I still don't understand some of the things the NFL does. You know, I don't understand why the NFL decides to do one thing over the other. But hey, let's say you made a mistake. We're all human. Even though you're a multi-billion dollar industry, sometimes you can be knuckleheaded and make a stupid decision. Change it. Competition committee, come in, change it. Stop letting the teams have their own ball, especially in the playoffs. Why in the heck is that even an option? There should be league-mandated balls that are handled by the referees, even if you just assign someone in these playoffs, because not during the regular season, all 16 of the 17 crews are working each week, with one having a week off during the season. But during the postseason, only the best crews get to go. So why not have someone who's paid just to handle the logistics on the field, whatever. I don't know, but someone has to be able to regulate this so that neither team gets any sort of advantage. Again, it's something I wouldn't have thought of, but now you have to make that change, and it has to be done immediately. So that's my whole thing on Deflategate. At the end of the day, for me, not a big deal. It had nothing to do with the outcome, and it's not going to have anything to do with the next week. So moving on to something from the other team that's been an issue, I'm just here so they won't find me. Marshawn Lynch. You know, it is funny to me personally, and I understand how it's frustrating to others, how Marshawn Lynch conducts himself in interviews. He doesn't want to do them. He has no interest in doing interviews. So I say it like this. All these fines we keep levying against these young men, I know that people will sit here and say, well, they should do the job. That's part of the job. I understand that, but what's really getting accomplished by making this guy go up there and waste people's time, wasting his time, instead of doing something that'll be more beneficial? Maybe Marshawn Lynch has more time to, I don't know, maybe sign autographs for kids, do some visits to different hospitals, whatever. Anything else that he would have interest in that would be beneficial to the community and show face for the NFL, instead of parading them out there in front of the media, who I'll say right now, minimum 20% of the media is idiotic. They ask some dumbass questions like, what's your favorite balloon animal? I've heard this asked at a press conference. I'm like, what the heck's wrong with your brain? That's an actual question. So there are idiot questions asked out there, and some of these guys don't want to deal with it. Also, to get, and this is not all the media, it is a certain sect of them, though, to get whatever headline they want to, they'll antagonize. Now, just because I'm making $10 million a year, I shouldn't be antagonized. There are CEOs of companies making $1 billion or $700 million or whatever absurd figure. So if you think just because an athlete makes a certain amount of money that they should have to deal with certain things, that's all your opinion and you're welcome to it. But me personally, I say, why not try to work out a system where if a person literally seems like, because I think that he's doing things to intentionally piss off the NFL, but I think he's doing it because he does have social anxiety issues and the NFL is forcing him to do something. So he's like, all right, I'm just going to answer this like this because I can't think on my feet the same way because I have social anxiety issues, especially when the camera's on me. So I'm just going to answer like this. I'm going to answer like this. Let him do something that's more productive instead of wasting all of our time and fining him for something that just, to me, is just ridiculous to fine him for. There's plenty of guys who want to talk in front of the media. Tom Brady's one of the biggest prima donnas in the NFL. So is Richard Sherman. Let those two talk all day. They want to. They love it. So stop antagonizing and forcing people who have no interest in that, who just want to play the game and do it well, into doing something that they shouldn't be doing. Now, as far as finding him for the or whatever, hey, I'm fine with that. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's something kids see him making a gesture while he scores a touchdown. That's fine. Fine him for that. But to fine him for not wanting to interview or sit on a podium for 5 minutes is just stupid. NFL, stop with the stupidity that you force these young men to go through for no reason. It's silly to me. Yes, folks, I'm glad to be back so I can speak my mind on this game I love so much, football, and give my positive and negatives on it. I don't care. You're gonna have to find me because I'm going to tell you exactly how it is. All right? So getting down to the nitty-gritty. So we've talked about the issues New England's had over the last 2 weeks. We've talked about the issues that – or one of the issues that have been had by the Seattle Seahawks. Now, these two teams are meeting in the Super Bowl. Here's what's going to happen in the Super Bowl. You're going to get the two number one seeds facing off. That's a big deal, folks. That means the league system during the season got it right. The teams with the two best records went through the playoffs. They each won two games. Now they play in a Super Bowl, two best records in the NFL. That's how it should be, in my opinion. You proved it all year. I don't like situations where a team, quote-unquote, gets hot unless they're clearly the best team. I think it was 2010. The Green Bay Packers had injuries, and that's why they went 10-6 and had the sixth seed. They were the best team in the NFL that year. They just had injuries the whole year and couldn't sustain anything. I think they went 15-1 the next year or something like that. So that's a difference between a team really being the best team and a team like, let's say, the Giants in 2007 getting hot. Nothing against – or not 2007. 2007 was a little better run. 2011, when they got hot and got lucky because they didn't have to play a Saints team that year and didn't have to play certain teams that matched up much better against them because they kind of got lucky. Also, Alex Smith company decided to not play in the NFC Championship. Neither here nor there. So I like when the teams that have done well all year prove their mettle during the playoffs and make it through to the Super Bowl. So let's look at the matchup. The Patriots offense has done the job with LeGarrette Blount, understanding that balance is the key, and you can stress out a team not just by spreading them out with five receivers, but you can stress them out by dictating what they do with your bunch assignments, with ace personnel, putting one back there, LeGarrette Blount, two tight ends, putting whatever set that you put. They've learned to do that, and they're able to do that now. They couldn't do that earlier in the season because they didn't have the personnel. LeGarrette Blount gives them the opportunity to use some of those bunch sets and use that ace formation and personnel and really do some damage with it. So I think the Patriots offense has gotten leaps and bounds better from the beginning and even middle of the season until now. The balance that they're able to exhibit is great. And I think they're more the team we saw against Baltimore than they are the team you see against Indianapolis. I just think Indianapolis wasn't ready for that challenge. The Patriots do have a lot to offer on offense, starting with Rob Gronkowski. He's going to be a matchup nightmare. I said LeGarrette Blount giving them the opportunity to play action fake and do things like that. And an X factor in this game could be Shane Vereen. Shane Vereen being lined up everywhere on the field. I think that they're going to put Shane Vereen out wide more than a few times, then move him into the slot opposite of Julian Edelman, have him in the backfield, and expect Shane Vereen to actually get a carry or two in between the tackles just to kind of keep Seattle honest. You know, when he comes in the game, they expect him to flare, quick passes to the tight end or slot receiver with Shane Vereen going wide just in case it's not there for a check down. Instead, I think that New England will hit them right up the middle because the defensive tackles relax a little bit or even fire off the ball too far up the field and Shane Vereen can get through. So on the offensive side of the ball, I think the Patriots will give a good contest to Seattle. Seattle's offense, one of the most underrated offenses in the NFL. I don't think people understand that you can be complex by being simplistic. What that means is you don't have to have these fancy formations that Mike Martz or even Sean Payton has. You just have to be smarter and perform it better than the opposition. Window dressing helps you generally because your substance isn't there. That's usually what flash does. Flash gives you something to think about really quickly because substance isn't there. The most substantial offense in all the NFL for just doing its job by far is Seattle's offense. It just looks basic. What it reminds me of is the San Antonio Spurs offense and game in the NBA. There's no flash to it. It just gets done. There's no window dressing. It just gets done. And when the game's over and you've lost, you realize they were better than you. You're going to see a lot of Marshawn Lynch not just running the ball through the interior because they don't want to use him as just a battering ram until maybe the fourth quarter. What they want to do is put Marshawn Lynch in opportunities to make yards after any initial contact. So they'll do flares with him. They'll do double screens where they look to throw the ball out to Jermaine Kearse one way and go back to Lynch the other way or vice versa. They're going to try to do that stuff. And don't worry, there'll be quite a few interior runs from the backups in Seattle just to give Lynch a blow or two. And Russell Wilson played probably his worst game as a professional against the Green Bay Packers, got a W. By no means am I going to sit here and say Russell Wilson is going to come in and play MVP caliber football. He has the opportunity. I think that he'll just play good enough football, which means he'll put stress on that New England defense. With his legs, because he makes smarter decisions than the majority of quarterbacks in the NFL of when to run. I actually think he's the smartest running quarterback in the NFL because he understands when to run and when not to. So Seattle's offense can put stress on New England. And the position that can put the most stress on them, and this is going to sound silly, New England's going to load up and prepare for the run and also watch for the screen game. Watch for the intermediate to deep passing game with guys like Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse, guys that you wouldn't expect to be big-time receivers. They're good route runners, use their hand to catch the ball. They get the job done. Excuse me. As far as the defense goes, we're going to go back to New England's defense. New England's defense fires up the ball very well. I like what they do in the secondary. The only issue I have is that they, both corners, get too handsy at certain points in time. And actually, Devin McCourty covers up some of their efficiencies. Yes, the great Darrell Revis, while he's great at mirroring and doing that job, he's been more handsy this year than he's ever been and gotten called for some penalties. Brandon Browner seems to tackle people all the time. So these smart Seattle receivers who are a little undersized, it'll be easier for them to be pulled down. You'll be able to notice it a little better. And if England doesn't keep their hands off of them, they could draw some penalties in that manner. Expect the New England defense to try to get after Russell Wilson and force him to make the bad choice. They'll bring a blitz where they wrap two guys on one side and then bring a spy over the top of the way, knowing that Wilson likes to spin out, turn his back to the and drop from a blitz. Well, when a guy is just sitting there, not rushing you, but putting pressure on you, it'll make him throw a pass that he might not be able to throw. He's not the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. He usually makes the good decision, but if forced into a manner where he has to make a bad throw, he may make that bad throw. So that's what New England's going to have to do. They're going to have to bring exotic pressures that force Russell Wilson to make quick decisions or uncomfortable decisions. He gets on the move. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL on the move. So that's how they win the game. As far as the Seattle defense, understanding their assignments, more than anything, last year, I thought Seattle would reign supreme against Denver because Denver runs a lot of shallow crossers, and then they do double moves and get you down the seams and the sideline. Seattle's going to put their hands on you to knock off that timing so that Peyton Manning couldn't make those throws, and it worked. This year, Tom Brady does not have the same thing that he does. Tom Brady is not as timing-based as Peyton Manning. What Tom Brady does is he knows where he's going 1-2-3 really quickly. And he knows where the assignment's supposed to be. If Seattle, who has blown coverages over the last 2 months, no one's really taken advantage of it. If Seattle blows coverages, Tom Brady can hit them for big plays, and that's how you beat Seattle. You don't beat Seattle by chopping the ball down the field early in the game. You have to get a big player to enforce their offense to change their hand. If you can get up by two scores on Seattle, it forces their offense to change their hand. Okay? They're going to keep running the ball, but it'll force them into more empty sets than they'd like to be in. And even though they do very well with empty sets, that takes one threat away from you, the threat of the handoff. Okay? So watch for New England's offense to take advantage of Seattle's defense if Seattle's defense is not assignment sound. As far as the game goes overall, I expect that each offense early on will dictate what they want to do, but they will play cautiously. There won't be chances taken early on in this game, but I think that the run game and screen game of Seattle will be able to work the ball down the field. And I think that New England's knowledge of their assignments and also New England using personnel packages that confuse Seattle will allow them to work the ball down the field. Early on, the offenses dictate. It's whatever defense will take over later. I think Seattle has a superior defense. I see Seattle winning this game, and the game will be closer than the final prediction. I have Seattle winning this game by 10, 31-21 in this particular matchup. So, okay, that's all my coverage of the NFL. We're going to go to the NFL mock draft here. Now, here's what I like to do in my mock drafts. I tell you what I'm doing with each one. As I get closer to the actual draft, I'll start to do more predictive measures where I'll tell you kind of what I think the teams will do, okay, because people want to know that. Early on in this process, in January, February, even into March, there's no knowledge that we can gather of what the teams will do because there's new coaches who were hired in January. There's new installation of packages in February. There's negotiations that start going into the nearing the draft. So now you get clear knowledge of what they're going to do and who they're going to resign and things like that. So teams will kind of tip their hands at that point. So then we can make predictive measures of who's going to go where and why in reality. At this point, all I can do is pretend as if I were the GM. In doing that, it means I'm making the selections as if I was a GM for each of the 32 NFL teams. Okay? The next thing after that is that the picks are based off of my personal rankings. So a guy may be ranked the 14th best wide receiver for someone else. I might have him as third. So I'm going to draft him in the first round, even though he's probably going to go in the fourth round. And the reason I said that is because that, with my knowledge of that position and looking at these guys, that's what I would do right now because I don't want the opportunity to lose out on that guy. And then the final thing is, again, this is not by any means what you can take to the bank what teams are going to do. This is my mock draft. I try early on not to put things like trades and things like that. As we get closer and things are more established, I might put trades and things like that in. But right now, there's none of that. I actually thought about doing that early on, but no, I'm going to stick to the model. The only thing that I'm predicting is the last two picks because the Super Bowl hasn't been played yet. I have New England with 31 and Seattle with 32. So without further ado, we're going to get to this mock draft with the first overall pick going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, the Buccaneers had an interesting season. They could have won 8 games this year. They were actually in a lot. They led the New Orleans Saints twice this year. They, early in the season against the St. Louis Rams, against the Carolina Panthers, they had games they could pull out. The second meeting against the Atlanta Falcons, they could have pulled out. There were so many games that they played where they could have pulled out victories, but they found a way to lose. Interesting ways, whether it's a pick six in overtime against Minnesota or a fumble, whatever it was, whether it was a safety. Who loses a safety? Whatever the situation was, they found ways to lose. They lost on an injury. The guy didn't get off the field against St. Louis. It's amazing. So with that first overall pick, conventional wisdom to me says trade it if you can get the value you deserve, which is 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks, and probably a 5th-round pick. I don't think that anyone's going to give you that. If they did, I would definitely be trading this, but at this stage, I don't think so. My team needs, I do need a quarterback. I need some offensive line help at the tackle and the center position. I'm going to go with Jameis Winston out of Florida State. I just think that he is probably the smartest quarterback on the field with his assessments versus pressure that I've seen in the last decade, and that includes Andrew Luck. Again, my biggest criticism of Andrew Luck was the fact that when faced with pressure, Andrew Luck did not deliver the ball on time. He actually held the ball too long. And I think Jameis Winston does not do those two things. Now, he takes more risk and more chances. That is true. But I'd rather ride with a guy who takes more risk and chances like a Tom Brady than a guy who's going to play it safe like Peyton Manning. You can say 6 one way, 6 the other. I'm making a decision. And I think Jameis Winston is the best young quarterback to come out in the last half decade or so. The second pick, the Tennessee Titans are drafting here. And I think Tennessee has had some issues, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They could not stop the run. So outside linebacker, even corner was an issue as they lost Altuve Verner. Right up the middle in defensive tackle. So I'm going to go with a guy who reminds me a lot of Marcell Dareus. You know, coming out of that 3-4 scheme, has been switched around in hybrid systems, but mainly played in the 3-4 as a 5 technique. And that's Leonard Williams, defense tackle out of USC. He's a junior. Williams should come in and control against the run while being able to rush the passer. I think he has the ability to play the 3 technique. Will probably be a dominant 1 in this scheme, but we shall see how he plays out. I think with Tennessee, I want to shore up the defensive side of the ball. I know Marcus Mariota seemed like the natural pick here, but I say it like this. I think they have their quarterback for the next few years on the roster. I'm not saying the next 10 years or the future or anything like that. I think Zach Mettenberger was the most underrated quarterback in the draft last year, and getting him in the 6th round was a steal. I think that with a healthy full season at quarterback, a full offseason as a starter, the right thing and make him the starter, working with those receivers and also getting the offensive linebacker in shape, this will be what we need as a Tennessee organization. Again, I'm speaking as the GM, to bolster our chances of winning that division. And that's strengthening the lines with Leonard Williams and riding with a guy like Zach Mettenberger, who's already on the roster. Number 3 overall pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars here. Now, the Jaguars actually were in more games than it seemed like this year. They played okay football. Blake Bortles was just below average, but I will give him this. He improved virtually every week. He still has some issues, especially in the intermediate passing game. I'm going to blame that on youth over him not studying anything like that. I think that he has the work ethic to get a lot better, and they have talent around him to get better. They did have some issues on the defense side of the ball, not getting consistent pressure from the rush end. They still had some offensive line issues at guard. And then the outside linebackers were lackluster athletes, but not really fit to play in the scheme. Gus Bradley probably wants more activity there. I'm going to go with Randy Gregory out of Nebraska, the defensive end with great range. He's a junior. A guy who can get around the edge and cause havoc. He doesn't play like him, but he bursts into the backfield like Bruce Irvin used to. I think Bruce Irvin played with more bend than Randy Gregory does, but Randy Gregory's more dominant at the point of attack than Bruce Irvin was. So this is a great pick for him. They can get more consistency in the pass rush. And also, remember, Gus Bradley, that Seattle background, he likes to rotate defensive linemen, especially the ends. This will give him the opportunity to do so. Number 4 pick, the Oakland Raiders here. Now, Oakland finally got a win after 10 weeks of futility, and they got their quarterback of the immediate future in Derek Carr in the 2nd round. I liked their draft last year. They got a lot of talent, especially in the first like 4 or 5 picks. They had issues at corner. Wide receiver was a depth issue. And free safety is aging out. They signed Charles Woodson back. I'm going to go with Amari Cooper here out of Alabama, the junior wide receiver. More polished product coming out than anyone I've seen in at least the last 5 years. He is a step above as far as the total package than any receiver, even in last year's class, which I think was the best receiving draft class of all time that I've seen personally. I can't say what happened in like 1982. I can only say from the last like 15 years or so of watching football and the draft and following it, what I've seen. But Amari Cooper is the most polished product I've seen in years. Right up there with the Larry Fitzgeralds and Randy Mosses of the world as far as coming in with a skill set that immediately makes them a starter. So now you'll have a tie to, you'll have the Irving to the quote-unquote Aikman. Number five pick, the Washington Redskins. Now, the Redskins struggled offensively to find a groove because RG3 went down with injury again. Protecting him is key, so they need some help. You know, the offensive tackle, especially the tackle, guard position, and they still need some depth at corner. I'm going to go with Andres Pete out of Stanford. He's going to come in and play the right tackle. This junior, very, very strong at the point of attack. I think that he can move, especially with the scheme that Jay Gruden's going to want to use, and will be very helpful opening up holes for a guy like Alfred Morris and a healthy RG3. So watch for improvements there. This will be very helpful. The sixth overall pick. Are here, and you know, it sounds like they're gonna go with the guy who won the Heisman Trophy. You know, they definitely, to me, I think Geno Smith improved as the year went along, but Geno Smith is, in my opinion, not the long-term answer because he still hasn't found it consistently. I know that it's pieces around him, but at the same point in time, I need you to play a little better than he has. They still need help at cornerback, outside linebacker. With the new coaching hire of Todd Bowles, a guy who comes from a defensive mind, I don't think he goes with Marcus Mariota. I think that he says, you know what, I'm going to see what Geno Smith has to offer under my tutelage and under my staff's tutelage. And I'm going to go with the most active pass rusher left on the board, and that's Vic Beasley out of Clemson. Probably the best fit, in my opinion, for what Todd Bowles wants to do coming off the edge. There's a lot of Von Miller in his game, and I think that Vic Beasley will be excellent in this defense. The first senior drafted. Remember, the first five picks were juniors or sophomores. The first senior take went back to school, and it pays off for him in my draft. Seventh pick, the Chicago Bears are here. Now, this is a pick that I thought about trading. The Bears need more picks. They also need more help. And I think that with what's left on the board, especially with Mariota sitting there, you got some teams that would look to jump up and snap it up in this particular draft. I'm not trading. So, Chicago Bears not needing help at quarterback as an immediate issue because they owe about $1 billion to Jay Cutler. Need help in the secondary. They do need more rushes. With two gone off the board, I'm going to go with the best safety in the country. I'm going to go with Landon Collins out of Alabama. Combo safety who's more suited to play strong safety. If there's a balanced set where you play too deep a lot, or even a Seattle where they'll put Cam Chancellor, who's a strong safety, back deep, and Earl Thomas in the box, and they switch off. He's that type of safety. He can play high. He can play in the box. He can play balance. He can cover. It's not his strong suit. He comes up in the alley very well, and I think that's what they need to clean up the mess in Chicago from the defensive back position, and that's junior safety Landon Collins. Eighth pick, the Atlanta Falcons are here. And Atlanta, again, this is where some of the slides happen. Atlanta doesn't need a quarterback. Matt Ryan, I think he's probably one of the 12 or 13 best quarterbacks in the NFL, arguably up to number 8 when he's on his game. You look and you say, well, what does Atlanta need? Atlanta needs help on the defense side of the ball. They struggled on offense because of all the injuries, whether it was a foot problem with Julio Jones or the entire offensive line being hurt at one point. You literally had five guys who were hurt, and three of them were on IR in the first 3 weeks. So I go to the defensive side of the ball and go with an extremely active force, a guy who can play that hybrid system that they're going to play in Atlanta, because they're going to play 3-4 and 4-3, switch back and forth, and that's Dante Fowler Jr. out of Florida. This guy is an active force. He was one of my 15 top players preseason, and he didn't disappoint. He was living in the backfield. He was probably the best player on Florida's entire team this past season. I know there's Vernon Hargraves who played very well, but this guy was the brightest spot on a Gator team that was putridly disappointing. It was just awful to watch on offense. As a person who did attend the school, it, it, It was awful to watch, folks. So Dante Fowler Jr. will get the job done if he's an Atlanta Falcon, coming off the edge and disrupting the passing of guys like Drew Brees, the future quarterback in Tampa, whoever it may be, or Cam Newton. Number 9 pick, the New York Giants are drafting here. New York did need some help. The offensive line was still a concern as Eli Manning had people pushed back in his face far too often. You had safeties who should have ball skills like Stevie Brown, Antrell Roll, but they didn't really produce. With Landon Collins going off the board, I'm going to go with that offensive line. I'm going with Brandon Scherff out of Iowa. The offensive tackle can come in, the senior can come in. I think that he'll be a very effective force. And what he can do is allow the guys to shift over to more natural positions. I think that Justin Pugh playing the right tackle, or even, if necessary, going to guard would be fine. You get more depth for that line. Eli can make stick throws if protected, and in a scheme where they want to throw the ball about 70% of the time, or they want to complete, I should say, 70% of the passes, he's going to need to be protected. 10th overall pick. The St. Louis Rams sit here, and the St. Louis Rams have to be the luckiest bunch of suckers in football over the last few years. They've just stockpiled and gotten better and better, and I think this is the new team that is on the cusp of being a playoff team and taking over. This NFC West as a whole, especially if they add another wild card, could have an entire division in the playoffs. And I actually think that if anyone's the odd person out next year, it's San Francisco will be the odd team out with team change. So St. Louis had Marcus Mariota fall in their laps. Bad quarterback play and an ineffective threat in their issue years. Sam Bradford is not a bad quarterback, but he's not a good one. He's often injured, which makes him not dependable. So you had guys like Austin Davis and Sean Hill in there. Marcus Mariota is 9,000 times better than them. He may not be as good as Jameis Winston, but he's better than what they had last year, and they still were able to win games. Poor quarterback play under center. 11th pick. The Minnesota Vikings are picking here, and they needed help at certain positions. I actually think they need another safety playing next to Harrison Smith. They still needed more rush-in talent, and they needed more talent at the wide receiver position, and they get it with Devontae Parker out of Louisville. This senior wide receiver is a guy who I think that he is would be number one receiver in most classes over the last few years. Not last year, not this year with Cooper, but there have been multiple classes where this guy would be the gem or the jewel of the class. He, to me, has a little bit of Jalen Edwards in his game, how he's able to stretch defenses, but he's strong. He's bigger and stronger than you expected, about 6'3", 215 pounds. 12th pick, the Cleveland Browns are selecting here, and the Browns, they haven't put it all together. I still think that even though Johnny Manziel, who played horrific football when allowed to play, you have to remember, still a younger guy. Brian Hoyer, who is a good backup in my opinion, you need to throw as much talent on that team for whoever's going to play quarterback, even if it's neither of those guys. And at the receiver position, you saw what happened. Josh Gordon wasn't there. They had no receiving options. Allow Isaac Crowell and Terrence West to be legitimate forces in the backfield. You have to get the eight-man boxes out of the way. Getting a guy like Kevin White, wide receiver out of West Virginia, should be very, very helpful. High ball combination of speed that he does possess versus size and strength makes him a difficult guard. And even if Josh Gordon does come back, now you have a 1-2 punch where if either goes down or there's an issue with either of them, which Kevin White hasn't had any, you'll see a very, very active secondary trying to play against those monsters at receiver. 13th pick, the New Orleans Saints are picking here. And on the same thing, they didn't get the pass rush they expected, even though Junior proved to be a Pro Bowl caliber player this past season. You had Jimmy Graham dropping passes, even though we know he's better. Maybe it's because of the big contract he just signed. Drew Brees looked skittish. Some people who are Saints fans were calling for his head, even though I'm not going to say all that. I know that the likelihood was the fact that he was under more pressure than he's ever been under as a Saint in his career last season. So do you help the defense side of the ball with a defense that was just horrific, or do you help the offensive side? I'm tired of the Saints drafting first-round cornerbacks who end up being busts because you as a corner can't defend if there's no upfront pressure. With that being said, the guy who I think would have fit in Dante Fowler Jr. is gone. I'm going to go with a guy who put multiple positions on the offensive line. And in my opinion, the most important position, I'm going to go with Cameron Irving out of FSU. Remember, preseason, he was my top tackle. He didn't play as well this year at tackle as he did last year. But when they moved him to center, you got to watch Cameron Irving blossom and grow. I think that he could be a stud pick for the Saints and be a starter at center for years to come if they were to select him here. And if for some reason they are at center, they want to move him out to tackle, he's better than Zach Strief right now. Play that right tackle immediately. 14th overall pick. The Miami Dolphins sit here, and Miami needs help in the secondary. Yes, they had one of the best corners in Brent Grimes, but Courtland Finnegan was kind of a letdown. Still need guard help after still trying to recover from Richie Incognito. And as odd as it sounds, they still need some more punch at running back. I know that Lamar Miller's the man, but they need some more punch back there. I'm going to go on a defense side of the ball, and I'm going to help them there. And I'm going to go with Marcus Peters out of Washington. This junior corner has a lot of good size to him. He's about 6 foot, 200 pounds, playing opposite of Brent Grimes. I think that he starts from day one and can give them the lockdown ability necessary on that side of the field, playing the field side corner, and really being a guy who, against the bigger receivers in a New England, or even against some of the shiftier guys that you'd see with the Jets, he can cover both types of guys. 15th pick, the San Francisco 49ers are here, and the 49ers, regime change. Jim Tomsula is the new head coach. I still think that they're going to stick with 3-4 scheme. And what you need to do when you're playing that type of defense that I expect them to play, I think that you need more than pass rushers, you need interior defensive linemen. I think that the offensive line, they've tried to build with depth over the years, and I think that they're pretty set there. They can get more depth later. I think going with a guy like Danny Shelton, who is strong at the point of attack, would do him wonders. This guy out of Washington should play the nose tackle position and should do it very well. Lots of quality punch and can hold so that the rest of the team can do what they need to do. 16th pick. The Houston Texans are picking here. And Houston, we have a problem at the quarterback position. You did have a quarterback who threw for 6 touchdowns in one game last year, but let's be honest, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not your guy for the future. I don't know why the heck Tom Savage was even looked at to be drafted, but it's neither here nor there. With Mariota off the board, I thought about going with a quarterback here, but I decided to go with best player available for what I need, secondary help, too many blown assignments. Trey Wayans doesn't blow assignments. This guy's well-coached out of Michigan State. The junior could have been drafted as a sophomore because of the ball skills he possessed and also the mirroring ability that he had. 17th selection, San Diego Chargers. They had issues late in the season because they had a guy who, I'll just be honest, he played like a bum late in the season, and that was DJ Fluker. He did not produce the way that he should have. You have Big King Dunlap, who is just that. He's just big. He gets in the way. His footwork is slowing down as well. You need a guy who can play either of those tackle positions, and I have a guy who's perfect for that, Lyle Collins out of LSU. Underrated guy. People say, oh, he's a better rush blocker than he's a pass blocker. I think that he's equally balanced and versed in both. I think that he can come in and immediately start over Fluker because he's a better football player. 18th pick. Kansas City Chiefs are picking here. And the Chiefs, they had issues at wide receiver. Again, I don't think in Andy Reid's offense that you keep loading up on first-round wide receivers, especially with a quarterback who, that's not his primary. His primary is the check down. And that's not an insult. Some guys, that's their primary. Sometimes the offense calls for that. I don't think Andy Reid's offense usually calls for that, but it seems like Jamaal Charles is the option to go to with the current quarterback in place. So I don't even touch the offense right now. I go on the defense side of the ball. Derrick Johnson has been playing quality football for years, but Derrick Johnson's getting older. They also just have issues at the linebacker position as a whole ever since the unfortunate passing of Jevon Belcher. I go with Denzel Perryman out of Miami. To me, he's the best pure inside linebacker in this draft. I think that he fits perfectly in a scheme where you have multiple inside linebackers. He's little. His issue would be side-to-side range. It's not playing what's in front of him. And he reminds me, I mean, I'm going to say it, and I'm not saying that he's going to have this career, but he reminds me of Ray Lewis as far as sniffing things out. He was a little undersized last year, but he put on some weight. He's about 5'11", probably about 235 now, maybe 240. And he sniffs out the ball carrier very well. And in a scheme that doesn't require him to be in coverage too much, this should be perfect for the Kansas City Chiefs. 19th pick, the Cleveland Browns have it via Buffalo. I think the Cleveland, if I'm the GM, I'm loading you up with talent. There's no excuse anymore for anyone, whoever's quarterback, whether it's Johnny Football or whoever. I already have one receiver in Kevin White. I don't know if Josh Gordon's going to be able to play next year. I'm going with Sammy Coates. Now I have a 1-2 punch. What I have now is I have the speed guy who actually performed very well at the Senior Bowl, who can really get the job done as far as the athleticism portion. You have Kevin White can high point the ball. That's a tough guard. Both guys will make the roster, and both guys will be effective players in the future. 20th pick. The Philadelphia Eagles are here. In Philadelphia, they wanted Marcus Mariota. I think that they, especially if he falls to, let's say, the 10th pick like he does in my draft, they're going to jump up and get him because it's more affordable. It's only a couple of first-round picks, a couple of second-round picks, something like that. Where they had a bigger deficiency, even though I think quarterback is hurting and Nick Foles is not good for their system, the bigger deficiency was in the secondary. And they need a guy who can play multiple positions, even though I think that corner is best suited for him, and that's Josh Shaw at USC. Josh Shaw just looked like a beast. And that's one of the things that was lacking in Philadelphia. They had no one in the secondary who played strong at the point of attack. And it was unfortunate. So they get a guy who can do that now, and I think that makes them an instant contender for their division. Remember, they had the most wins of any team not to make the playoffs with 10. 21st overall pick, the Cincinnati Bengals pick in here. Cincinnati had one of the best defensive tackles in the game in Geno Atkins. He suffered some injuries. They need help there, whether it's depth or just a guy who can step in and start. And that's going to be Malcolm Brown out of Texas. Very impactful on the interior. I think that this senior can come in and immediately grab a position as a starter. 22nd pick, Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a team that they pride themselves on defense. They've been doing that for years. Steel Curtain. I think they have the most defensive players in the Hall of Fame or some craziness like that. Anyway, one of the issues has been consistently having a pass rush. And they were able to develop that last year, but they had to engineer it with blitzing schemes and certain things that were not familiar consistently for Pittsburgh. Jason Worlds is probably out the door. They're not going to re-sign him. I think you draft a guy who I think is one of the best edge rushers in this class, Elvin Bud Dupree, out of Kentucky, coming off the edge. He's got length to him. He's effective. He's got good punch. The main thing is that he is active all the time with athleticism, and I like that for what Pittsburgh does. Reminds me of when Jason Worlds came out, and I didn't think he was a first-round pick type guy. I think Bud Dupree is a little better than him, but their talent is higher than what they do as far as football players. And at the end of the day, it's just what you need. And I think Pittsburgh needs talent. 23rd pick, the Detroit Lions are picking here. Now, Detroit has needed help at corner for years. You know, they've gone and got Darius Slay. They've gotten Bill Bentley. They've gotten all these different corners. And what they did last year was they caused so much pressure up front and were so active that it didn't matter that they had above-average corners. They didn't need to have great corners. I think that they're losing that this year because you have both defensive tackles who are going to be free agents, restricted free agents, and whatnot, and Sue and Fairley. Well, here's what's going to happen. I don't think they'll be able to resign both. They probably go after Sue, who will be more expensive, and Fairley has been kind of a disappointment at certain points. They like active guys. I think that Eddie Goldman out of FSU, the early entry junior, is very active, and he can be very effective in this defense. 24th pick, the Arizona Cardinals are picking here. Now, I tried to do the same thing last year for the Arizona Cardinals, and I'll stick to it this year. The Arizona Cardinals were a top five team in the NFL all over the place except for one position. And I'm not saying that every position they were the best team. I'm just saying if you eliminate this position from every team, they're the one of the top five teams in the NFL. And that's quarterback. Once Carson Palmer, who was an effective guy, went down, you had Drew Stanton come in, who was not even that good, about 49% of his passes completed. They still won games. Then you have Ryan Lindley, who is the worst starting quarterback in NFL history statistically, come in, and they still won a game or two. I draft Brett Hundley here. Brett Hundley suffered through having a terrible offensive line last year. I'm not sure if he's going to be the starter day one. I know that he's better than what I currently have on the roster, and my improvement level necessary is not as high at any other position as it is at that quarterback position. 25th pick. Carolina Panthers are picking here, and Cam does need help at the wide receiver position. He definitely does. The defensive side of the ball, they need more rush-ins. If they're not able to get back, I don't think they're going to bring him back. Excuse me. Oh, my goodness. I can't even think right now, folks. But anyway, they're not going to bring back a young man who got Greg Hardy, who got in trouble last year. They still need help on the offensive line, though. That's the biggest issue. And I think they get it with Eric Flowers out of Miami, a guy who's uber athletic. They needed tackle help. They had guards playing tackle last year in Byron Bell. This gives them the opportunity to do more things, stretch defenses with some of their zone run concepts, and protects Cam Newton so that he can throw not under duress. And I'm not saying that that was the reason Cam Newton threw poorly last year, but it didn't help not having proper protection. 26th pick, the Baltimore Ravens are selecting here, and I'm going to go with a pick that may not make sense to people, but I think that this is a good long-term pick. Ray Rice is out the door. He's not coming back if I'm GM. Good luck to you, young man. I just don't want you here. Justin Forsett ran the ball well last year. Had him in fantasy football. Definitely helped me out. Bernard Pierce was effective in a backup role. Lorenzo Talaferro, to me, has power back capabilities, but he's not an answer long term. I'm drafting a guy who doesn't even need to step in day one, but if he's healthy, is instantly one of the best backs in the NFL. Reminds me a lot of Le'Veon Bell as far as being a bigger guy. As they've shed weight, you've seen the quickness, the ability to receive the ball out of the backfield, the versatility. If you bring a guy like him in, Todd Gurley, the early entry junior, can be big time for this organization. If he's not ready day one, you still have guys who are ready right now in his place. 27th pick, the Dallas Cowboys selecting here. Dallas played out of the ball. Tony Romo, no turnovers. You watch that offensive line just dominate. DeMarco Murray not being re-signed, you say, we're going to go out and we're going to get a running back. Todd Gurley's gone off the board. We have to go get that guy who is the man, right? Don't want to pull the trigger on him because, I don't know, we might get a deal done with DeMarco Murray. And if we do get that deal done, we don't need him. We do need more edge rushers. And Shane Ray, when not a clown, is one of the best edge rushers in all of college football. This junior coming off the edge was a sack leader in the SEC last year, and he should be very effective in my defense for the Dallas Cowboys. 28th pick, the Denver Broncos selecting here. Now, the Broncos, interesting team. You know, they loaded up. They were ready to win the Super Bowl this year, and they didn't accomplish it. You know, Peyton Manning's, quote-unquote, at the end of his rope, even though he keeps going. Let's see if he's able to play next year. There's no quarterback that I would take to replace him now that Huntley's even gone off the board. What do you pick? I'm going to go with a position that doesn't seem like it makes sense, and I'm going to go with tight end and pick Max Williams out of Minnesota. Early entry sophomore, can be an inline tight end, can play in a slot if you need him to. He can do a lot of stuff for you. Here's why. None of the Denver tight ends are coming back or re-signed already. They're all free agents, including Julius Thomas. If Julius Thomas, for some strange reason, doesn't re-sign with a quality contract, because they might not be able to afford him, they may just franchise him. bring him back for just this season. And now you have Matt Williams as your number two guy and can build for the future with this kid because he is a heck of a football player just waiting to blossom into a star. 29th pick, the Indianapolis Colts pick in here, and this is a no-brainer pick to me. This is the easiest pick that I've made in this first round past number 10, and that's Melvin Gordon out of Wisconsin. You put Melvin Gordon in the backfield with the talent that's possessed by Andrew Luck in this offensive unit, and Andrew Luck and company become a front runner for the AFC next year because I still think there's a depreciation factor to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and even Ben Roethlisberger. Now you look at Indianapolis being a heck of a team, a 13-3, 14-2 type team because they have a home run hitter in the backfield who became a smarter runner this past season. 30th pick, the Green Bay Packers are picking here. And this is a pretty easy pick to me also. You know, they've protected Aaron Rodgers over the last few years. They've also gone early in the draft and gotten receivers like a Davante Adams. I think that they still haven't taken care of the inside linebacker position. Why not do it with a guy who is a thumper, a guy who immediately comes in and is better than what they have there? And that's Bernardrick McKinney out of Mississippi State. He is rangy. He should play in the 4-3, but I think putting him in the 3-4 as a guy who will be in coverage, taking A.J. Hawk's position because he has not played up to snuff. He actually played decent football this year, but he's an upgrade to everyone on their roster at the inside linebacker position. 31st overall pick, the New England Patriots are drafting here. And one of the things about the Patriots is that they make things look better than they are. That wide receiver position in New England is mediocre right now. You had Kimbrel Tompkins starting games last year doing things. You had Aaron Dobson before injury trying to do things. You signed Brandon LaFell. He's your number one guy at this point with Julian Edelman getting the most targets. Danny Amendola has been a disappointment most of the time. Let's go get a big receiver. Let's go get a guy who is a matchup nightmare who can also mask as a tight end because he played that early in college, and that's Devin Funchess out of Michigan. This junior will be a matchup nightmare. He has a lot of Kelvin Benjamin ability because of his physical stature. He's not as fast, but I think that he's better at the point of attack of the ball going to get it than Kelvin Benjamin. So you look at what you're getting, and I think Tom Brady will have a new best friend on the exterior. 32nd overall pick, the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Seattle, we're going to see in this game that part of the reason that New England has a chance is that this guy does not play the run lanes well, and that is a guy named K.J. Wright. He has improved zero in that aspect. So they get a guy out of the local area who could have gone to top 15. Rich getting richer. They get Shaq Thompson, outside linebacker out of Washington. Big time, big playability, and that will improve their defense and give them even more depth. 50th pick, the Buffalo Bills are here. Buffalo has Rex Ryan coming in. Rex Ryan loves certain things. You say, let's go get a quarterback. No. Rex Ryan's going to say, I want to improve my defense. There's one position on the defense that was subpar last year. They played okay as Denoris Searcy played decent football, but he wasn't the guy. I'm taking Cody Pruitt, a guy who cleans up every mess for the last 2 years at Ole Miss, and he was a heck of a ball player over the top for their Landshark defense. Watch for him to be big time for Rex Ryan's defense. Well, folks, coming to the end here, actually going to sign off. The position that I wanted to talk about was quarterback. Who's the fourth quarterback in the draft this year? I'll leave it up to you. Is it Garrett Grayson out of Colorado State, Bryce Petty out of Baylor, Shane Card out of ECU, Brandon Bridge out of South Alabama, or Jake Waters out of K-State? Think about that. Hit me up on Twitter. My handle is CJ49. Hit Emory up at F-Ball Game Plan or Gene up at Gene Clemens. For the Football Game Plan Radio Network, this is Chris James signing off. Enjoy your week, folks. I'll be back next week, and I'm glad to be back, period. Take care, and have fun watching the Super Bowl.